The ocean, which is the source of all valuable jewels, supplied the upper and lower portions of a yellow silken garment. The predominating deity of the water, Varuna, presented flower garlands surrounded by six-legged bumblebees, drunken with honey. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When bathing the deity in the Abhishek ceremony with various liquids, such as milk, honey, yogurt, ghee, cow dung, and cow urine, it is customary to supply yellow garments. In this way, the Abhishek ceremony for the Goddess of Fortune was performed according to the regular Vedic principles. Om Agyantimidandasya Yananjana Chalakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Asmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutha Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajataham Sahakana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Patan Sahakana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Vasindubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The ocean, which is the source of all valuable jewels, supplied the upper and lower portions of a yellow silken garments. The predominating deity of the water, Varuna, presented flower garlands surrounded by six-legged bumblebees, drunken with honey. A reading from 8th Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 8, entitled The Churning of the Milk Ocean. Text 15. From this extraordinary pastime of the churning of the ocean of milk, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, has made her appearance in this universe. in today's verse, she is being honored by the great sages as well as the devatas through the performance of Abhishek, or a bathing ceremony. Srila Prabhupada explains that in this way, the Abhishek ceremony for the goddess of fortune was performed according to the regular Vedic principles. Srila Prabhupada personally taught us how to do this Abhishek ceremony, when he would install deities. There are nice photos and even video footage of Prabhupada performing these Abhishek ceremonies. It is a very special part of the culture of Vaishnavas. On Janamastami, Radhastami, Gaur Purnima, Ram Nomi, Narasingha Chaturdasi, on the special appearance days of the Lord, traditionally in every temple there is this bathing ceremony. Sometimes done very simple, sometimes with very elaborate arrangements. And oftentimes devotees are very, very excited about this. Every year in Barasana, the home of Srimati Radharani, they do this Abhishek ceremony very early in the morning. If I remember, it's around 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning. And the Brijabasis, they usually stay up all night by the thousands and thousands doing kirtans. It's gaining more and more enthusiasm. Then when the doors open and the deities come out, and everybody is really excited. If you're not excited like them, you might get trampled to death. Very, very exciting situation. And the whole temple is absolutely packed and overcrowded with people, filling the hall, all the doors, on the rooftops, on the terraces, all just to chant the holy names and be a part of the ceremony of welcoming Srimati Radharani into their hearts and into the world. Of course, maybe even more crowds and enthusiasm is Gaur Purnima evening at Mayapur Chandrodai Mandir in Sri Mayapur Dham. Have any of you ever been there for that Abhishek? It's like trying to cross the ocean of milk, just trying to get from your room to there. Ocean of pilgrims. Such enthusiasm. But what is this Abhishek? We can see it from various perspectives. But essentially, it is a ceremony to give pleasure to the Lord or to his eternal consort. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would often say, don't try to see Krishna, but serve Krishna in such a way that Krishna is pleased to see you. In deity worship, seeing the deity is not really the important part of the reciprocation, of the relationship. It's really being seen by the deity. We can see the deity and think, oh, it's dressed so nice, I'm enjoying looking at Krishna so much. That's good. Because param drishtva nivartate. When we see Krishna, who is Hari, he captures our heart away from wanting to see the so-called beautiful objects of this world. We are so much inclined, conditioned, habituated to be the enjoyer. We want to be the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer. Janasya mohoya mahamameti. I am this body, I am what is in relation to this body, and I want to be the enjoyer of what is mine, or even what isn't mine. So this enjoying propensity keeps us entangled, birth after birth after birth, in forgetfulness of our real identity as the eternal loving servants of Radha Shyam Sundar. It is the all-pervading epidemic disease of material existence, that I am the enjoyer. It's the cause of all suffering. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. Krishna tells that I am actually the supreme enjoyer of everything and everyone. So when we come before the deity, our propensity is, let me enjoy seeing the deity. And certainly that's better, to enjoy seeing the deity than to enjoy seeing many entangling objects. But in the path of bhakti, there's a higher principle. Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas teach us how to serve the deity, how to be seen by the deity. We decorate Krishna very, very beautiful for Krishna's pleasure. And Krishna likes to look very wonderful to attract the hearts of all living entities. We decorate the deity very, very nicely for Krishna's pleasure. And if we actually do it in that way, it gives pleasure to our soul. I always wondered, how is Krishna pleased by Abhishekam? Because most of us, it would be a very uncomfortable situation. Think about it. You're in a public place, there's thousands of people all around, and you're standing, and then somebody starts pouring honey all over you. Totally covering your entire body with honey. And then totally covering your entire body with ghee. And then yogurt, dahi, and milk. And then in some places they start putting orange juice and mango juice. I mean, you probably would enjoy drinking mango juice, but having it poured all over your body? Do you ever think like that? Because I've done many Abhishekas, and I think, Krishna, I don't know how you like this so much. it must be very uncomfortable from a material perspective. But factually, because all of these substances are offered with love and devotion, and as we were explaining last night, with enthusiasm to please Krishna and serve Krishna, Krishna is supremely happy having his Abhishek ceremony. It's not the honey that he likes. It's the sweetness of the devotion, the love in which it's offered. Krishna's happy to be just completely cover this with the sweetness of the love of his devotee. And ghee, what to speak of cow dung, yes. We mix cow dung with water and totally bathe Krishna. More and more and more, panchagavya. And then cow urine. I remember years ago when I was herding cows, one of your new Ramanreti residents, Param Brahma Prabhu, such a dear friend and god brother who passed away a few years ago, he was the president of the Brahmachari Ashram. And I was pujari and I would milk cows. And every morning, just as I was milking the cow, he would come into the little goshala. I was the only person milking them. It was like usually 3-4 cows. And he would come in and he had a special little cup and he would have me collect cow urine for him to drink every day. And sometimes we would drink together, like a social event. In America, this is the custom. A guest comes to your house, you have drinks together. Well, when people would come to the goshala, we would drink cow urine together. That was our hospitality. And you know, you could drink a little, but it's intense. But getting bathed in it was very... But for Krishna, he's accepting the purified love of the cow being offered by the love of a devotee. When Srila Prabhupada first sent Shalagram Srila to the West, he wrote a little note. He said, I want to establish Shalagram Srila in the Western world through all of you. And he said, you can bathe. He said, the instructions he gave is you can bathe him with water, and you can add some rose water to it, and then dry him with a towel. He gave very nice instructions. He dictated. And then put chandan and tulsi leaves. He said, first class Shalagram worship means tulsi leaves. And that was really all we had to do. Then he said, and if you want to, you could draw a face on him with chandan. And then you can give him a dhoti, a chadar, a crown, and a flute, specifically. We were always thinking Shalagram is Narayan. But Prabhupada, Narayan doesn't play a flute. Only Shamsundar plays a flute. So Prabhupada was singing according to his vision, and he was teaching us that Shalagram is Krishna himself. Gopinath, the Lord of Gopis. Sriman Rasara Saram Di Bamsiva Tatatastita. Prabhupada saw the Shalagram Srila as Krishna who stands under the Bamsiva tree playing a flute to call Gopis to his loving service. And then he wrote, if you want to do more elaborate, you can consult with Jananivas Das in Mayapur. So I wrote to Jananivas and said, you know, we're doing this very simple, and it seems that Prabhupada would like us to be more elaborate, although he's happy with us doing it this way. Can you explain how you do it? And he began by writing, we offer all the 64 items that Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila. And I looked at the 64 items. And then he said, and if you would like more information, I will give. And soon, you know, from from just a little bit of water from a well with a drop of rose water in it. We were doing Panchamrita and Panchagavya and so many substances. It, just to install the items took about half hour before we even started doing anything. Very, very elaborate. The ceremony took about 2 hours every day just to give Shalagram his bath. He was only this big. Somehow or other, we were enthusiastic to do everything we could. And eventually, we were meant to come to the realization that it's all for the pleasure of Krishna. Krishna loves to see us when we are approaching him with devotion. And devotional service, anything we do is eternal. Neha bhikramanasusti pratyavayon vipyate. The abhishek starts and it's finished. And on a daily basis, nobody sees you doing it. On Janmashtami, Radhashtami, Gaur Purnima, everybody comes and sees what a wonderful pujari you are doing abhishek. But the rest of the year, it's just you and Krishna. You're being seen. But any act of devotion is so special if it is done with sincerity in Krishna's heart. It's like we make the garlands. We can see today Radha Shyam Sundar, beautiful garlands. It takes hours and hours to make such garlands like this. Who is making garlands? Can you stand up, please? Thank you. Arivo, arivo, thank you very much. Wonderful. Now these garlands, within a day, they wither away. And then they get all soggy, and you give them away, and then they're nothing. Yes? They last a day at the most. And then they're gone. Apparently, physically, they're gone forever. So material conception is, why not put our energy into something that lasts? Why put so much energy every day into something that's just going to wither away within a day and it's gone forever? Yes, I could spend that same time making money and buying things that have long-lasting... But Krishna likes... He likes flowers. In fact, in one place, Srila Prabhupada writes that the decorations that Krishna loves the best are flowers. He likes flowers more than diamonds and rubies and emeralds and all these other wonderful gems. Even though they're here and within a few hours, they're gone, they're finished. That's our material vision. Actually, acts of Krishna accepts bhavagrahi. He accepts our intent, our purpose, our devotion, our willingness to please him. And even a moment of trying to please Krishna, for Krishna, it's on this spiritual platform. It's eternal. Every flower that you have ever strung on every garland is eternal. in Krishna's eyes. He never forgets it. It's in his heart forever, that garland. What you see Radharani and Shamsundar wearing now, in their hearts, that garland is, it's going to be just like this. Even when Lord Brahma dies, even when the entire cosmic manifestation is destroyed and Shiva performs his dance, that garland will be there in Krishna's mind, as will every act of devotion we've ever offered to him. And that is how we have to understand devotional service. We cannot see it with mundane vision. We cannot see it cheap. Every offering to Krishna is eternal if it is done for the pleasure of Krishna. It is eternal in the eyes of Krishna, and it is eternal as far as our own spiritual account. But at the same time, offenses, aparads, cause pain to Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if you worship the deity very nicely, but then you offend devotees, how does Krishna see that? It's like putting a beautiful garland and crown on him, and then picking up a stick and smashing his head with it. Is that worship? Oh, Krishna. Idam malam. And then you put the garland on Krishna, and you put the clothes on Krishna, and then at the end, you pick up a stick and beat him. Krishna's not happy. Similarly, we worship the deity. Or we chant the holy names. And if we offend devotees, because Krishna's in the heart of devotees, Krishna says, it's like beating me with a stick. So nothing in Krishna consciousness is simply ritual. We have to understand the spirit behind the process of devotional service. The spirit of what really pleases Krishna. The six Goswamis, they built magnificent temples for Krishna. Their followers, Govindaji Mandir, Gopinath Mandir, Radharaman. And they have such wonderful, wonderful deity worship. In fact, in South India, in Udupi, Sripad Madhvacharya, he was sitting on the sand on the coast of the Arabian Sea, just praying to the Lord Krishna, singing beautiful songs. And one day, a boat from Dwarka got caught in a windstorm. And it started rocking around, and the waves became very, very turbulent, and the boat was about to sink, and the captain saw Madhvacharya sitting there, and he was crying out for help. And Sripad Madhvacharya, who's son of Vayu, he took his chatur and went like this. And the windstorm ended, and the sea became calm. And the man took his boat to the shore and said, I'll give you everything, anything, whatever you want from this boat, take it. He had a lot of valuable things. Madhvacharya said, what do I want your things for? Where are you coming from? He said, Dwarka. He said, oh, Dwarka, do you have any Gopi Chandan? Have any of you ever been to Gopi Talab in Dwarka? That is the source of all bona fide Gopi Chandan in the world. It's a lake where the gopis came to Dwarka, Radharani and gopis, and they bathed in this lake with Krishna. And it was filled with the dust of their lotus feet. And the lake has dried up, but the great acharyas in the scriptures tell us that all the soil of this big, big lake is all the dust of the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna and gopis. And we put this on our body as an act of surrender. Taking the dust of the feet means, in spirit, to serve. Srila Prabhupada told us when taking dust of lotus feet really means the spirit of humbling oneself to be the servant. And that spirit is the most purifying thing. Sometimes devotees, you know, they take dust from each other's lotus feet just to show who's stronger and can get the dust from the other. Or ritualistic. Take it and then you criticize. But it's the spirit in which we take. That's what purifies us. So this boatman said, actually, he didn't care about Gopi Chandan, but it's very much available in Dwarka. And when he put all of his expensive wares on the boat was not even. So he took some big lumps of Gopi Chandan just as weights to balance the boat nicely. He had two big Gopi Chandan pieces. And he gave them to Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya was very happy. Gopi Chandan from Dwarka. To a materialistic person, it's just dirt. But to a devotee, it's very, very sacred. But long ago, in the time of Lord Krishna, Devaki and the queens of Dwarka, they wanted to see Krishna in his childhood pastimes, because Devaki never got to see Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. Through the whole Vrindavan Leela of Lord Krishna, Devaki was in prison in Mathura, associating with Kamsa, not by her own will. So she wanted to, she heard so many stories about Krishna stealing butter, and just hearing about it charmed her how so much. I want to see that form of yours stealing butter, Balgopa. So Krishna manifested that form. And she was so charmed, and Rukmini was there. She was really charmed. And she said, I want to worship you in this form, Krishna. Because in Dwarka, he's prince. He's royal. So Krishna manifested this beautiful form where he's a little boy. In one hand, he's holding the churning rod for churning butter, and in the other hand, he has a rope. Go like this. He's standing like this. And in the inner sanctuary of Rukmini's private quarters, she would offer her love and devotion to this deity. But then somehow or other, after Krishna left this world and the queens left this world, the deity was lost. Nobody knew where it was. But Madhvacharya, he picked up this piece of Gopi Chandan, and it cracked open, and Rukmini's own personal deity of Krishna as Balgopal was standing right before him. So he brought Krishna into the town of Udupi between the Ananteshwar and Chandramaleshwaram temples and established the deity worship. Very, very strict standards. Madhvacharya lived about 750 years ago. And from that time, there has never been anyone who has touched the deity except his initiated sannyasis. Only sannyasis are allowed to actually do the physical service of the deities. Others can provide them things. Very seriously, The standards have continued for 750 years without deviation. The same exact standards that Sri Padmavacharya established. It's quite elaborate. They do artis with so many different tradu, and they different lamps with. Sometimes the lamps, they have one ghee wick or deep, and then there's others with 32 and 64 and 108 at a time. How they put the deity to rest in everyday processions. So there was one of the sannyasis, they do two-year shifts, the different mats. His name was Palimar Matswami. And I remember he collected money and he bought a crown for Udupi Krishna, which was made of diamonds. It cost over a crore of rupees, which in those days was a couple $100,000. Of course, people criticize. One piece of jewelry, you're spending several $100,000 for the deity? And some journalists were challenging, why don't you use this money to feed the poor? Instead of, you know, the deity already has so many, so much jewelry. He has all the jewelry. Because they don't put like plastic. They use only real jewelry. And real jewelry lasts a long time. So they have most of the original jewelry and all that's been offered since for the last 750 years. So he doesn't need another crown. He already has so many crowns. Why? $200,000, $300,000. I think in those days it was $300,000. Why don't you feed poor? And I remember speaking to Palimar Matswami, and he told me his reply. Would you like to hear? He wasn't fazed, because he knows that if you water the root of the tree, then every part of the tree will be satisfied. If you don't water the root of the tree, then every part of the tree will be in an undernourished and suffering condition. He said, in this country of India, when the Prime Minister goes somewhere, how much does the taxpayers pay for the Prime Minister's one day? What to speak of the President of the United States? When the President of the United States goes somewhere, let's say he goes to London, or let's say he comes to Alachua to give a major speech, the amount of CIA and, what is it, CIA, is it? Secret Service people, and they usually rent out entire floors of hotels, very, very costly hotels. All the bodyguards, his private jet, it's just him flying on it. You know how much that costs? Upkeeping that jet. He says, just for one little ruler in this world, of one little tiny country, in one little speck of a planet within this universe, spending more of a crore of rupees every day. And here is the Supreme Lord of the entire, not only this planet, not only of this universe, but all universes, and beyond this universe of all the Vaikuntha planets, and not only the Vaikuntha planets, Goloka, the entire existence, all material and spiritual worlds, aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna says, I am the source, the proprietor, the Lord, the King of all material existence, all spiritual existence. So once in my lifetime, I offer him this crown? He says, nothing. We should be offering him these crowns every moment of every day for the rest of eternity and more. It's still not enough. The journalist surrendered. It's true. The deity is not just a statue. The deity is Krishna himself. How can you ever offer too much? And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave Raghunath Das Goswami his own Govardhan Shiva. He received it from one sannyasi who came from Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri. And he saw Krishna personally in that Govardhan Shiva. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna in the mood of Sri Radha, and she sang her beloved's body, not just a piece of stone. He would often keep it on his chest, hanging. It was always covered with his tears. And for several years, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worshipped that Shiva and then gave it to Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami, who previously was a tremendously wealthy person, gave up everything. He had nothing. Do you know what he was eating himself? First he was begging, but then he thought that this is too opulent. So he stopped begging. And he went through different stages, but at a certain point, there was a place in one of the sides of Jagannath's temple where the shopkeepers, they would sell the Mahaprasad of Jagannath Dev. And after some couple days, that prasad would become, whatever was not sold, would become rotten. So they would dump the decomposed prasad in a pile where cows would come and eat it during the daytime. And some of the rice, because it's mostly rice, some of the rice was so stale that the cows would spit it out. It wasn't acceptable to cows. And cows are not very fussy about things. They eat grass. I remember I was once in Kurukshetra, and I saw these cows walking around eating banana peels. Yes, because people just, they eat the banana and then they throw the peel. And then the cow comes and eats the peel. And I was thinking, God, these cows would probably really like to eat bananas. So I bought a dozen bananas and I gave them to a couple cows. And what the cows did is they took the whole banana in their mouth, and then they moved around like, you know, the way cows move. And everyone, there were two cows eating, or two or three, and each one of them, they spit out the banana and ate the peel. At least they accepted the peel. They just spit out the bananas, enjoyed the peels, and walked away. Because that's their conditioning. That's what they're used to eating. So if the rice that is not even acceptable to the cows, Raghunath Das Goswami would secretly come in the night when no one was around, and he would collect the rejected, decomposed rice. And he would wash it, and he would take the inner particle of it and wash it nicely, and maybe add a little salt, and that's all he ate. So he was living a very, very simple life. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard from Swarup Damodar Goswami what Raghunath Das Goswami is eating. So one day he came just at lunchtime, or whatever. He came just at the time when Raghunath Das Goswami was supposed to have his prasad. And Lord Chaitanya asks, "Oh, I heard you are eating very nice prasad. Give me some." And Raghunath was so ashamed. He said, "No, no, my lord, I'm not eating very nice prasad, honestly." But then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Krishna with Sudama in Dwarka, he knew exactly where it was, and he reached behind and grabbed it and ate a handful, a portion. And he was so happy. He was about to eat more, and Swarup Damodar Goswami said, "That's enough, that's enough." The devotees could not tolerate seeing Lord Chaitanya eating this. And Lord Chaitanya, he said to Raghunath Das Goswami, "I have tasted all varieties of sabjis and cakes and sweets and savories of Lord Jagannath, but never have I tasted such prasad that is so delicious and satisfying is what Raghunath Das Goswami is eating every day. Why are you not inviting me?" This was how he was. Very simple. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so satisfied. Mahaprabhu Bhakta Ganer Vairagya Pradhan. In this connection, it is said that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes great pleasure in seeing the renunciation of his devotees. And renunciation is the very life and soul for the followers of Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya was so happy. He gave Raghunath Das Goswami his own Govardhan Shila, which was his own worshipable deity that he kept on his personal body practically day and night. He reciprocated the deepest, most intimate ecstasies of love with that Giriraj Shila. And he told Raghunath Das Goswami how to worship him. He just bathe him with a little water and offer him some tulsi leaves, and he'll be happy. And that was Raghunath Das Goswami's seva. He didn't have anything. He didn't have jewels or diamonds. He just bathed him with a little simple water from one of the wells of Puri. And then he offered him tulsi leaves. Lord Chaitanya said, a tulsi flower, manjari, with a leaf on each side of it. I think he said, offer 8 every day. So in Puri, you can just go out and collect so many tulsi. Maharani. So simple was that deity worship. And after some time, Lord Chaitanya had Swarup Damodar Goswami buy a certain type of sweet to offer Giriraj. And that was considered by Raghunath Das Goswami to be so opulent. One little sweet. And Raghunath Das Goswami would go out and collect some garland, some flowers, and make little garlands for him. So absolutely simple. But yet, he's our Prayojana Guru. It's considered the highest form of worship. Higher than what the Raghunath Das Goswami's worship of his little stone from Govardhan Hill. Some simple water, simple tulsi leaves. Is a higher platform of service than all of the pompous worship in Tirupati or Sri Rangam, which certainly is glorious. It's absolutely glorious. But Krishna doesn't see the thing. He sees the devotion. accepts our love. And as we were quoting from Srila Prabhupada last night, Krishna wants to see how we're honestly trying to please him. And Krishna will definitely put so many impediments on our path and so many temptations to distract us from the path just to see how strong our purpose is to please him and serve him. And if he just sees that we really are honestly sincere, that's all. That's all he wants. Whether you can do it physically or not do it physically. I was just with His Holiness Jaipatak Swami Maharaj. He just loves to give Krishna to others. Really amazing, because he had this stroke. I was in the hospital that morning, and the doctor said, he didn't say this to the devotees because he didn't want to break the hearts of the devotees, but he said it because this doctor was a very good and old friend of one of our devotees who was the director of Bhaktivedanta Hospital. So he spoke from one doctor to another, or from a doctor to an administrator of the hospital. He said, I didn't tell these people, but there's no chance he can survive. He said, from medical perspective, there is not even 1% chance that he could possibly live through this, the type of stroke he had. And he said, and if he does, he'll probably wish he didn't. He'll be in that condition. He was very, very difficult. He didn't really come out of his coma or semi-coma state for about a month. He was in critical condition for almost 2 months. And as soon as he became conscious, he was just giving Krishna to others. People would come and see him in that condition and they would feel so bad, and he couldn't even talk, but whatever way he could talk, he was speaking very humorous Krishna conscious remarks to make people laugh and happy. He was laying there, practically paralyzed. But he, even in that state, he was absolutely enthusiastic just to give Krishna to others. He was trying his best to make his body better so he could serve better. Quite amazing detachment. One day he called me and said, I would like to come to Radha Gopinath Temple to give Sunday feast lecture. In 2 weeks. He said, in 2 weeks. He had never given a Sunday feast lecture since this happened. And at our temple there's usually about 1,500 to 2,000 people that come for the Sunday feast lecture, who sit for the lecture. So, you know, I was quite astonished. And I wanted to just tell a joke to him. I said, Maharaj, the week before that we're having our Punayatra and there's going to be 4,000 devotees for 4 days. You can come for that too. And he said, oh, because he couldn't hardly talk. Very, very difficult to understand what he was saying, especially then. This is in January. He said, the doctors would not allow me to go. He said, then we talked about some other things. He said, how far is Pune? I said, it's 4 hours each way. He said, 4 hours, that means 8 hours. The doctors would never let me go. We talked about some other things. We changed the subject. I said, how many people you said were going to be there? I said, registered is 4,000 devotees. We talked some other things. And then he came in again. He said, but the doctors would never let me go. And a few minutes later in our conversation, he said, but the doctors are your followers. If you tell them to let me go, they have to let me go. I said, Maharaj, I was joking. I wasn't serious. But he took it very serious. So I didn't say anything to anyone because, you know, I don't want to be responsible for him to take an 8-hour drive in his condition. 8 hours means, you know, he's paralyzed. They have to lift him up and put him in an ambulance and drive him all the way there and then drive him back. And then sitting before over 4,000 devotees in a pandal in his state, it seemed impossible. So the day before I left for Pune with all the devotees, I get a call from the director of Bhaktivedanta Hospital. He said, for the past 2 weeks, every day he's talking about going to the Pune Yatra. And he said, all of his caretakers and all the local doctors have been telling him he can't do it. But he keeps pressing and pressing and pressing. So finally, just to end the discussion, we brought the subject to the chief surgeon who was overseeing his case, knowing that if he says no, then that's it. There's no more discussion on the subject. So he said, we went to the chief surgeon and told him the situation. And he said, going to Pune Yatra, 4,000 people, he wants to go and give lectures. Yeah, that's what he wants to do. Just tell, you know, if you give your certification that he shouldn't go, then that's the end of the discussion. The doctor said, it will be the best thing for him. He should go. And devotees asked, can you give us your medical, you know, evidence for why it's the best thing for him to go? He said, from a medical perspective, what's going to heal him most is what makes him happy. He said, there's very little that we can do beyond letting him a stroke like this. There's very little treatment you can do. You can do physiotherapy. And beyond that, you just have to let him heal naturally. And people heal better when they're happy. Their whole system is, it's being happy is healing. And he said, I've been observing this man. There's only one thing in his life that makes him happy, and that's giving Krishna to others. So if he can give Krishna to 4,000 people, that's going to make him really happy, and that's going to heal him. So he came. And in the middle of the yatra, this Indian ambulances are not like American ambulances. They're just vans with a bed in it. Yes? And, you know, then they kind of tie the bed down so it doesn't move around a lot. So he arrived. And, you know, they wheel him to with the wheelchair, and then they pick him up, they pick the wheelchair up and put it on the stage, and everyone's looking at him. And from a physical perspective, you know, most people would not want to be seen like that. His right side, most of it is paralyzed. He can't really move. His mouth is is kind of in a deformed state. It's going like this, and there's every few minutes drool starts, you know, saliva starts drooling out of his mouth, and he has no control. And then his eyes start watering, and because he can't close his eyelids so properly, his eyes start getting dried out, so somebody has to squirt stuff in his eyes, drops, and they have to keep putting things in his mouth and you know, wiping saliva and wiping tears. And he's speaking in such a way that really only one person, one of his caretakers, can really understand what he's saying. And he speaks, and then she kind of translates for everyone. How many of you would like to be in front of 4,000 people like that? You know, if you were in any way on the bodily concept, it would be pretty embarrassing. But he's just there. And, you know, things are coming out, and he's completely indifferent. You know, if people wipe it or not, he didn't really made no difference to him. He was just totally fixed on speaking Krishna Katha. Beautiful Krishna Katha. He spoke for 1.5 hours continuously. He was telling beautiful pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu and Prabhupada, and giving such nice siddhanta of the philosophy, and just absolutely oblivious to his physical condition. Just whatever state I'm in, just let me give Krishna. No complaint. He never complained. He never seemed frustrated by the inconceivable limitations imposed upon him by nature. He was just utterly grateful. Just to have the chance to give Krishna to people. And I was thinking, Prabhupada's own life of giving Krishna with such compassion, he invested and imbibed in those who loved him with such a deep spirit of compassion, of giving. This is an example of how Prabhupada influenced and affected many of his disciples. So the Abhishek ceremony, whether you're doing an Abhishek like Indra does for his deity in Swargaloka, or like they're doing in Tirupati, or in the beautiful temples of Govindaji in Jaipur, Govindaji is in the king's palace, or Raghunath Das Goswami is living in the forest all alone, just putting some simple water on a Govardhan Shila. Whatever we have, whatever we're given, Krishna accepts it if it's offered with sincerity. Prabhupada used to see that old lady come and just bring Radha Damodar some water every day for bathing. Just an old widow. She would collect some water from Yamuna every morning. Nobody would even see her. He would see her because his room was right across. Early morning, she would just bring a little pot of Yamuna water, put it in front of the altar, and go away. Even the pujaris didn't thank her. But they'd always see it and bring it in and use it to bathe Radha Damodar. Prabhupada would talk about her even when he was a world acharya, because she was sincere. Whatever little she had, or whatever much we have, it's just enough to please Krishna. So all these beautiful ceremonies like Abhishek are just beautiful ways that Krishna arranges for us to express that sincere desire to serve, to love. ultimately, Srila Prabhupada explains that these wonderful, wonderful forms of deity worship, we should do it as elegant and as beautiful and as wonderful as we have the facilities to do. But even if we have nothing else, there's no loss. All we need is the association of devotees and the holy name. If we can just chant Hare Krishna with sincerity. Our lives are perfect. So simple. What do you need? What paraphernalia do you need to chant the holy name? All you need is a tongue. And that doesn't cost anything. And a sincere heart. Hare Krishna. And even if your tongue doesn't work, your mind, you could just chant in your mind if that's all you have. Krishna will be completely satisfied. And we can attain the ultimate perfection of life if we can just worship the Lord by chanting his names. And all of these other beautiful arrangements that Krishna may give us, and all of these Hari Bhakti Vilas, all the elaborate prescriptions and descriptions of how to worship the deity and how to establish temples. It's all really meant to just bring us to the point where we can chant the holy name with a pure and humble heart. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? Mahatma Prabhu.
You know that statement in which Prabhupada said that I've created all these big projects to engage you because you can't just sit and chant.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, we have the understanding that just to sit and chant would be selfish, that the highest quality or greatest qualification of Vaishnavas is compassion. So how do we adjust the two, that perfection would be, or like we know Prabhupada wanted us to chant 64 rounds, we spend half our day chanting, but we can't do it. But is that the goal? Is that the perfection, or is the perfection to save the world, or how do they intertwine with one another?
In the line of our acharyas, they are inseparable. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to preach. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ordered Prabhupada to preach. He ordered all of his disciples to do like that. Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Prabhu, how they were preachers. Their followers. Gadadhar Das, so fearless. Abhiram Thakur, they just inundating the world with Krishna consciousness. So let us take the Goswamis. Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, they renounced massive wealth to come to Vrindavan, where they were begging from the Brijavasis to get some fried chickpeas or a little flour for rotis. They were sleeping under different trees in the forests on the bank of Yamuna, just wearing some discarded cloth and making kopan, loincloth out of it. Very, very simple. But yet, according to the Bhakti Ratnakar, Rupa Goswami was in anxiety, spiritual anxiety. He was writing these wonderful books on palm leaves because he couldn't find Govindaji. Lord Chaitanya wanted him to establish Govindaji Temple, to make Vrindavan a holy place of pilgrimage in which the whole world could start recognizing and coming. He was going to the different forests, going to the temples, going to the homes of Brijabasis. He couldn't find Govindaji. So here he is. He's writing these magnificent books for all time to come to establish the principles of pure bhakti. He's tasting the holy name like nobody else could taste. He had previously expressed his realization of the holy name. He wasn't just speaking something theoretical. He was speaking from his heart. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When I chant the holy name, I desire many, many tongues to taste the sweetness of that name. And when the name enters into my ears, I wish to have millions and millions of ears. And when it enters into my heart, it conquers my mind and senses. How many of you have that experience when you're chanting japa? That's Rupa Goswami. He doesn't need anything. He's beyond Atmarama. Totally self-satisfied, immersed in the ocean of love of God. But yet, for the sake of the world, he was supposed to find Govindaji on behalf of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He couldn't find, so he was in anxiety. How those who are in the highest bliss are in anxiety. This is bhakti. That anxiety is a higher bliss than bliss. So a little cowherd boy saw him on the bank of Yamuna, said, "Oh, Goswamiji, why do you look so much distressed? He told him, "I cannot find Govinda Dev. It was Lord Chaitanya's instruction to me." He said, "Oh, I know where he is. Come." He took him to Gomatil, a little hill, and there was a cow standing, letting profuse milk down into the ground. And the boy said, "That cow is giving milk to Govindaji." The boy was holding his hand. Then the boy left and disappeared. Rupa Goswami realized the boy was Govindaji himself, and I didn't even recognize him. I didn't even offer him obeisances. I didn't do anything for him. And he fell down, and then he realized that I've been given service, so I don't have time to lament. And he brought some Brijabasis and said, "Please dig here, Govindaji is here." They dug, and there was Govindaji, more beautiful than millions and millions of Cupids, Kamadevs. Devata showered flowers. And he established the worship. And soon, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami came and he started being a pujari and worshipping Govindaji. And they built that magnificent temple. What we see today is just a shadow of what the temple was at that time. So why? They were doing their bhajan. Because compassion is the great, showing compassion to the fallen souls and inspiring other devotees is the greatest service we can render to the Lord. Prabhupada wanted us to have these temples. Prabhupada himself put so much of his life's energy to build those temples for the world, for his disciples and for the world. But he always balanced it. We'll do what we can, but ultimately we don't need these temples. Even if we don't have anything, we just go out and do Harinam Sankirtan and that's enough. But to go out and give the holy names, to go out and give Krishna consciousness is our life and soul. Does that answer your question? So our personal sadhana and our preaching, they are inseparable from each other. Actually, our character and our service attitude to execute the order of the spiritual master is inseparable from our sadhana. If we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, if we're doing our japa, that we call our sadhana. But samsiddhir hari toshanam, we make advancement only by how much we please Krishna. What was that devotee at Radhakund, Rupa Kaviraj? He had meticulous sadhana from the perspective of his regulative principles of how he was up every morning and he was taking his baths in Radhakund and he was doing his japa, you know, at least 64 rounds every day. Maybe he was doing 3 lakhs, I don't know. He was doing a lot of japa. And he was an extraordinary scholar of the scripture. That means he was totally absorbed in learning the scriptures of the Goswamis, Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. But I believe it was Krishna Priya Thakurani, a great lady saint. She was there and she was chanting japa in one of his classes. And he got really angry with her. Why are you chanting japa while I'm speaking? And she said, actually, I'm listening, but because somehow the holy name has captured me so much that I can't stop chanting. I'm always chanting. And he chastised her. And because of that, he was completely rejected by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Radha and Krishna, even though he was doing such great sadhana. So unless we have good character throughout our life, throughout the day, our sadhana is pretty useless. If you don't have good character, if you have ulterior motives, if you have separate agendas, if you're harsh or offensive to others, if you're selfish, and even if you have the power to sit and meditate like this and do japa for 10 hours at a time, Krishna's not happy. Trinadapi sunichina, tarori basihishna, amani namanadena kirtaniya sadahari. Kaviraj Goswami cites Lord Chaitanya, that this verse of being humble and tolerant, like the grass and the tree, and being respectful to others, put that on the string of the holy name and wear it always. They're inseparable. Your character is inseparable from the quality of your chanting. A person who can't concentrate so much because of, you know, some karma in his brain, but who's really humble and loves to serve, even though that person may be struggling like anything to chant, that person is really pleasing Krishna. Another person who has a really good karma brain, who could just focus on the chanting, but doesn't have good character, doesn't have a right service attitude, isn't humble. Why should Krishna doesn't have to manifest himself because of your concentration? He wants to see your devotion. So if Guru wants us to preach, that's our sadhana too. If we don't do our sadhana, we will not have the power and the enthusiasm to be empowered to do the work of preaching. We have to, Prabhupada said, chant at least 16 rounds every day sincerely. That will empower you to be able to continue on and do these things, follow these principles. Live by proper Vaishnava behavior. So our willingness to do that is very much a part of our consciousness of what Krishna accepts when we sit down to chant our rounds or study the Bhagavatam. They're inseparable. Yes.
Microphone?
Thank you. Mother Kirtida. You know Mother Kirtida? She left her body about five, yes. 6 years ago. So I was in Dallas when she left her body, and Tamakrishna Maharaj was telling a little bit about her, and he was saying, even before she was a devotee, she had an incredible service attitude. She was a nurse. She would stay up all night. She would skip meals. She was totally dedicated to other people. And when Tamakrishna Maharaj had cancer, she did the same thing for him. And then he made this remark, which I wanted you to comment on, because it relates to what you said. He said, this attitude she had is coming from her samskaras from her past, and in this life I will never be able to develop that attitude. He was so impressed, overwhelmed by the depth of her devotion and selflessness. So when we talk about developing good qualities, we observe that everyone, devotees and non-devotees, they have a certain nature. So sometimes it seems difficult to develop a particular nature, and when we don't have that nature, it can become an impediment. So is that actually true, that there's a limit to how far we can go? And if so, how we deal with that? Do you understand what I'm getting at?
We may have impediments due to our previous samskaras, our karmic condition, but there is no impediment to our sincerity. And that is what Srila Prabhupada emphasized most. I was telling devotees recently about a class that I just gave in Mumbai. There was a couple thousand people coming, and I had no idea what to speak on, because I was busy doing so many things. And I'm not an organized person. I'm actually really spaced out. You already know that, so I don't have to say. So I was just thinking, what am I going to talk about? The lecture starts in 5 minutes. So in my room in Bombay, I like to forget that I'm in Bombay. So I have a really small room with straw mat on the floor. And some friends of mine, some Brijabasis from Vrindavan, they came to Bombay with a big, big bag of dust from Vrindavan. And then we have a farm community just about 2 hours from Mumbai. We have about 25 cows. So we got nice, fresh, warm, smoking cow dung. And this Brijabasi lady with her husband, they got a pot and put the cow dung in, and put the dust of Vrindavan in, then took water, and they brought some Jamuna water. And we have a kund near our temple called Banganga, very sacred place. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bathed there when he came to Bombay, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said he came to Bombay, which was then called Vaipayani, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then it said he bathed in all the holy places, and that's one of the prime ancient holy places that Ram and Sita and Lakshman, before they went to Nasi, Panchavati, they were there and they needed water, and Ram shot an arrow in the ground and the Ganga came up. So we used that water too. It's so nice, this Brijabasi lady with her hands, she's going like this. And then I asked her to put it on the walls in my room, and she went with her fingers. No instruments, just fingers. She just put it. So it's a cow dung room in Bombay. And it's so nice. We have